Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karmateksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Jewel Ornament of Liberation by Lama Tom Broadwater. Lama Tom will begin our study of the Jewel Ornament of Liberation by Gampopa. This text belongs to a group of texts called Stages of the Path, or Lam Rim. Gampopa takes us from the most basic and profound of Buddhist tenets to the realization of Buddhahood. Ornament, in its title, refers to those texts that cover the most important subjects in Buddhism in a concise, polished manner. Gampopa taught extensively and attracted many students. He is the source of the major surviving Kagyu schools, all known as the Dagpo Kagyu. Lama Tom will introduce the text and its author in what will be an ambitious series of talks and discussions by lamas and qualified senior students at Columbus KTC. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karmateksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to everybody. Glad to see you here. There's people from Indiana, New York, Ohio. I don't know if there's other people representing other places or not, but welcome wherever you come from. I'm coming from Zanesville, Ohio, which is about, maybe 60 miles from Columbus. I was up in Columbus this week and I saw the building project. They've got most of the basement walls completed and what looked like a bell tower, but obviously not. It's, I think, the elevator shaft. So it's really exciting to see that going up. So maybe we'll meet there sometime next year, hopefully. What we're going to talk about today is from the book, and it's going to be just backwards from what you're seeing, but the Jewel Ornament of Liberation by Gampopa with a commentary by Thongdrup Rinpoche. Last week, Lama Kathy gave a very good introduction to that, and I'm not going to go there because that introduction, just go on the website and under videos and listen to it. It was a wonderful introduction to this book, which was again written by Gampopa and commentary by Thongdrup Rinpoche. Wonderful commentary. Today we're just going to talk about Buddha nature, which is really the beginning and the end of the path. If at any time you have questions, feel free to put them on chat, and we'll try to save enough time at the end to go over them. What else do I need to say? If you're not on mute, please go to on mute, because inevitably, there's something going on in your house and we'll all get distracted. So put yourselves on mute. Having said that, the last time I gave a talk, the next door neighbor decided to mow his grass. And not too many people were able to hear me for a period of time. So, but it'd be nice if you would go on mute. Before we even begin, let's just take a moment to sort of relax and recall for ourselves why we're here and what we're doing and why we're doing it. Recollect that in your own mind. Each one of us have slightly different reasons for being here, but of course, our ultimate motivation is to benefit all beings and to reach Buddhahood. But for right now, let's just take a moment to recollect our motivation, and then we'll begin. So in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge. By the power of generosity in all six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. And the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge. By the power of generosity in all six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. And the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge. By the power of generosity and all six perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all beings. So today we're going to talk about Buddha nature. I really enjoyed preparing for this talk because you recollect things that you sort of had put in the back of your mind and you've forgotten about. And so when you teach, all those things come back up. And Buddha nature is one of the most hopeful subjects we could talk about. It is said to be the beginning of the path and at the end of the path. What's that mean? It means that Buddha nature is the very ground, the very basis for all practice. And at the end of that practice, we reach Buddhahood, Buddha nature. So it's both the beginning and at the end. Another way to describe Buddha nature, that it is our true nature, the true nature of our mind. And that's, if you really think about that, that's mind-blowing. So in order to understand what this nature is, we first have to talk a little bit about the Buddhist teachings on the three turnings. The three turnings of the Dharma. What we really mean by the first two turnings is they really are explanations and dispelling of our illusions and delusions. In the first turning, we are taught about the delusion of ego, the ego that we have artificially constructed, not our real self, but the ego that we have artificially constructed. In doing this, the Buddha gives us the means to understand ourselves as we really are, putting an end to our suffering and the causes of our suffering. So these are really the main points of the first turning. I mean, you could give a whole talk just about that. I'm just giving you the most important point, the point that that the first turning talks about ego and the emptiness of that ego. In the second turning, the Buddha went on to show the voidness, the emptiness of all things, to show the difference between what we think things are and our ideas about them and what they really are. Also, in the second turning, the Buddha taught us about the Bodhisattva, and the Bodhisattva's compassion and the six paramitas. Finally, in the third turning, the Buddha taught us about voidness or about our illusions, but the truth of the matter, about our true nature. This emptiness that's described in the first two turnings does not mean simple absence of things, but the infinite possibilities in that nature, that Buddha nature. This teaching is about Buddha nature had to come after the first two turnings. Why do I say that? If at the outset the Buddha had told us about our Buddha nature, we would have brought all the baggage of our delusions about ourselves and others, our habits of thinking about our solid fixations about ourself and others, And so we would not have been able to understand Buddha nature as the Buddha would have intended. Because in that case, we would have projected onto Buddha nature all our delusions, all our baggage, all our wrong ideas. We really have to be aware of our projections and our delusions before we can even begin to understand our Buddha nature. We first of all have to be freed from those false projections. Now I'm talking like we have done that. We're all still working on that, right? It's a process. But until we start working with these projections and dispelling them, we're not going to fully understand our Buddha nature. So when we dispel them, or start dispelling them, I should say, we start to appreciate our Buddha nature. So Buddha nature teachings came to us in the latter part of the Buddha's life. And some 1,000 years later, these Buddha teachings were put together, assembled by a Sangha, A-S-A-N-G-A. And his work really has become a reference for all study of Buddha nature. So what's the main point? The main point is that we are Buddha. The main point is that you and I are Buddha. But not only you and I, but every being with a mind has an essential nature of Buddha. All the qualities of the Buddha are present within us. So when we begin to realize that nature, when we begin to realize it, the qualities of the Buddha begin to arise within us. It's there all the time, right now, always has been, and always will be throughout all of our lifetimes, from beginningless past to when it ends in our Buddhahood. Buddha nature is our core nature. It is the core nature of you and me, the true nature of our mind. When the Buddha taught this, he didn't just use words. It was his presence more than anything else. When I look at my guru, my teacher, Kempo Karcha Rinpoche, he had many things to teach. But what remains in my mind to this very day is the feeling, what I got from being in his presence. And that's the way that Buddha also teaches, by his presence. He awakened people by his words, deeds, but also by his very presence. And he awakened us to the inner truth that we have this perfect nature with infinite compassion and wisdom. Everything that we mean by the Buddha is within us, including the three kayas, also referred to as the Buddha bodies. Some of you were in the previous Zoom meeting where we discussed this with Lama Kathy. The Nundro group talked about the three kayas. For reference, if you want some really good information in regards to those three kayas, you can look it up in the Great Path of Awakening, and it's footnote 67. But in any case, I'll go back to what I was saying before. Everything that we mean by the Buddha, everything is within you and me. And we'll talk about these three kayas a little bit later on. The three main points about that the Buddha made about Buddha nature are, first of all, number one, all beings with a mind have it. Every being from a grasshopper to a whale to a human being has it. That's the first point. The second point is that not only do we have that nature, but we all have the same nature. There's no difference in terms of gender, race, class of people. Regardless of any outward distinguishing characteristic, all have Buddha nature to the same degree. Whether you're the Karmapa, the Pope, or a murderer on death row, we all have Buddha nature to the same degree. That's the second point. The third point is that Buddha nature gives us the full potential to become a Buddha.
Until this potential is made real, realized, present all the time, until then, we're not Buddhas. We're potential. What this means is that we all have that potential. In most of us, this nature is not recognized at all. In some, like the bodhisattvas, it's very much recognized. And with Buddhas, it's 100% recognized. All that stops its realization, this realization of Buddhahood, are our delusions, our afflictive emotions, and these are absent in the Buddhas. Until that time, we recognize and realize, make that nature real in the present, we're not Buddha. So we have this nature that is covered up and therefore not yet activated. All those Buddha qualities lay hidden and not yet activated. The whole point is recognition. The difference between us and the Buddhas is recognition. They recognize and realize their true nature, and therefore it is a question of recognition as to how covered up that nature is. One metaphor that we've often heard is that it's like the poor man living in a hovel and buried beneath the floor of his dirt hovel. The dirt floor of his hovel is a jewel. Now, he's a rich man, potentially, but he doesn't know that that jewel is buried beneath his hovel. But even if he knew it was there, he'd have to dig it out to get the jewel. And even then, that's not enough. Then he's got to make use of that jewel. So the same applies to us in terms of our Buddha nature. Until we know it, we're still very poor. We're unenlightened. But even if we know it, then we have to work, develop the merit, work to dig it out. And then once we dig it out, we have to make full use of it. So it's like that. We have to know it's there, we have to find it, and we have to develop it. The third turning of the Wheel of Dharma shows that Buddha nature is the true nature of our mind. Another point is that it is changeless. It is the changeless nature of our mind. What covers it up all the time is impermanent, and so we can disperse of it. We can dig it out. We can dig that jewel out because what covers it is impermanent. It's impermanent, and it's what covers up is changing every moment, and it's nonstop. It's called everyday consciousness. This stream of consciousness that is ever changing covers up our Buddha nature. And if you want some more sort of ideas about this, it's, you know, what we see, what we hear, what we taste, what we smell, what we think, that's always changing. That's our ordinary consciousness. And that can be dispelled through working towards our Buddha nature. There's a prayer I say in the morning, and many of you may also say it, that sort of encapsulates this idea of the impermanency of appearances. And it says that we should view all appearances like cataracts in the eye, dreams, magical illusions, and clouds. It's really beautiful poetry. And it's in a morning prayer, I say. But these things occupy our everyday mind, even though they are totally unreal. They're not solid. They're not permanent. It's all the delusions pointed out in a Buddha's second turning. All these things have an impermanent, ever-changing, illusory nature that covers up our Buddha nature, which is not deluded, but timeless, changeless truth. In fact, it's the only truth. All Dharma practice leads to our realization of this timeless nature. I want to repeat that because it's really important. All your Dharma practice is leading you to the realization of that timeless nature. When we hear that we are Buddha within, it's not that there's some sort of tiny little Buddha, some sort of little Indian figure lurking within us. It's not like that. So what is the Buddha that is within us? The Buddha within possesses all the precious qualities needed on the path to Buddhahood, such as faith, courage, and wisdom. In a text, Buddha nature is often compared to an ocean because it contains many precious things. So like an ocean, our minds, our Buddha nature contains all those precious qualities that we need along the path. But in addition, we have to understand a little bit about the three kayas, which are very deep subjects to talk about and could be really another talk altogether. To some extent, I feel it's beyond my pay range to talk too much about the kayas. I'll give you enough to point you in the right direction and knowing that what I say is not erroneous. I won't be pointing you in the wrong direction. So the three kayas are the three bodies of the Buddha. There's also a fourth one that is sometimes mentioned, but we'll talk about the three bodies of the Buddha. And the three bodies of the Buddha are the real meaning of Buddha nature. You have within you the Dharmakaya. The Buddha mind, wisdom beyond form. It's also emptiness. All these words point to the reality within. We can, you know, unless you're a Buddha, you really can't describe it. The rest of us just have to use words that point in that direction. But going back, when we say that the Buddha mind is emptiness, that doesn't mean that there's nothing there at all. That would be a very nihilistic view. It's not just some sort of big blank But, and again, I'm using words to point you in a direction. There is a luminous clarity. The texts talk about a luminous clarity about this emptiness that allows everything else to appear. This luminous clarity is a characteristic of emptiness. And so how does this luminous clarity manifest? Well, in the two other bodies of the Buddha, the Sambhogakāya, when it manifests for us, it's really the Nirmanakāya. The Sambhogakāya is really, as Lama Kath explained earlier, is that which appears to more advanced beings, bodhisattvas. We can imagine it and often do in our Vajrayana practice with the deities having the qualities of the Sambhogakāya by the ornaments they wear on their bodies, the jewels, the necklaces, the anklets, and so forth. That's sort of pointing in that direction. But actually to see them and to see these Buddha fields beyond the imagination is something a higher being, someone who is further along practice in the, on the path. For the rest of us, the Buddha body appears to us in the form of the Nirmanakāya, for example, the historical Buddha. All these are in us in the form of our Buddha nature. But again, this topic of the three kayas is very profound, very profound. But we have to at least come to some understanding about it to appreciate our Buddha nature. So we can say that Buddha nature, the whole teachings on Buddha nature, form the very basis of the Mahayana path, the way of the Bodhisattva. And as we study this Bodhisattva path, we learn how this Buddha nature is uncovered step by step. And later on in the book that we're reading, The Jewel Ornament of Liberation, those the specifics, steps on that path are enumerated. But I won't steal somebody else's thunder. I'll let them cover that later on. But in any case, it is a step-by-step process. But the point here is that as one travels this path, step by step, little by little, these qualities of faith, of courage, and so forth, devotion, they arise in us. And they arise naturally based upon our effort, based upon our devotion. That's what happens on the Bodhisattva path. We're often very hard on ourselves, but if you really take a look at yourself, not arrogantly, but realistically look at yourself as you go along this path, you'll see the softening of your heart, the development of compassion in your heart. You'll see wisdom beginning to dawn just a little bit, to develop fully when we become Buddhas. But it's a slow step-by-step process, and it's we really should not be discouraged by the fact that it is step by step. In the Vajrayana path, which is the path of tantras, We take a slightly different approach to the path. As I said before, in the Mahayana, it's step by step by step, going towards Buddhahood. In the Vajrayana path, we take the result, Buddhahood, as the path. In other words, we practice seeing ourselves as realized as the Buddha. And that's the result. So in deity practice, they give us a temporary, but how do I say this? Let me rephrase that. The Vajrayana methods of deity practice give us a way to temporarily, but totally suspend our habitual way of seeing ourselves and the world as ordinary. It's these beautiful Buddha fields where an enlightened being in this Buddha field, we suspend totally, but temporarily, how we see ourselves and our environment around us. We can identify with the Buddha that we really are. So people, and I have heard this, who dismiss this deity practice are missing so much. And it makes me sad that people are not interested in this Vajrayana path, because it gives us a glimpse of who we really are. So, again, we identify with the Buddha within through Vajrayana practice. For example, the Buddha is compassion, right? So in Vajrayana practice, we can identify with the compassionate Shinraisi. The Buddha heals mental and physical ills. So we can identify with Medicine Buddha. In Vajrayana Buddhism, we recognize that not only are we the Buddha, but we are Buddha in all the ways that word means. Again, it's temporary, but it can be total. That's why we work on shamatha, because it allows us to be disciplined and one-pointed in our practice. And we can one-pointedly put our attention on this visualization of ourselves and our environment as Buddha and Buddha fields. So we are Buddha wisdom mind, the Dharmakaya, that is emptiness that manifests as Sambodhakaya in pure lands, and we can manifest as Buddha to other beings. So in the Vajrayana, we become the three kayas. That's how to understand the Vajrayana. Now, again, it's important to recognize that we have to train in this. We have to learn to do this. And so that's why a teacher of the Vajrayana is really important to assist your practice, to give you the right directions, to give you empowerments, and to give you understanding. Because, and this happens to folks, if you don't get the instructions appropriately and you go along in your practice and all of a sudden you say, am I doing this right? All of a sudden all your confidence and so forth is lost. So it's important to get those instructions, but not only to get them, but to get them right. The important point here is that the basis, again, the basis of all Vajrayana practice is Buddha nature, just as it is in our Mahayana practice. So besides deity practice and the path of Tantra, which is called the practice or path of skillful means, we have the what's also called the path of liberation. Lama Kathy talked about this in her introduction to this book. Basically, the path of liberation includes Mahamudra and Dzogchen. Those are examples of the path of liberation. And in those practices, those very special practices, we learn to work with the mind directly itself through training and insight. And we use that insight to look into the mind to recognize that Buddha nature and the presence of those three kayas in all the aspects of our lives and in the bardos. Again, the point is that all Dharma practice is directed towards our recognition and our realization, making real our Buddha nature. Now that we've talked about Buddha nature, I'd like to talk a little bit about the obstacles. And there are more than the four that I'm mentioning, but I'll mention four obstacles that are enumerated in the text about obstacles to manifesting our Buddha nature. The first obstacle is having hostility or a natural dislike for Dharma. And there are folks like that. You may talk to folks that just, I'm not interested. It may be because we aren't skillful enough to present it properly, but it's also the possibility that they're not inclined to the Dharma at this point. You may plant a seed, but they just may not be interested in going forth. And we have to say ourselves at different early or points in our life, we may not have been interested in Dharma for any number of reasons. We may have been so caught up in our samsaric attractions, we just didn't have time or didn't want to be bothered. And just not want to practice. So you can never enter Dharma with this kind of an attitude. But even if you don't have hostility to the Dharma, there may be no confidence in the value of the teaching. So there is a feeling that everything taught is sort of useless. And you'll see that among folks. You know, what's the use of that? And sometimes that's just because of our ignorance. You know, we may not see a particular teaching as being useful to us, but that feeling may be something we need to look at. And even if one of the things Kempo Karti Rinpoche one time said is, even if you don't fully understand or believe a particular part of the teachings, he said, like, put it in a file cabinet. Put it in a drawer, mark that file. I don't know what this is all about. I'll come back later. that's sometimes something we can do. But, you know, obviously it's very hard to work with an attitude that is, well, it's impossible to work with an attitude that's hostile to the Dharma. The second obstacle to realizing our Buddha nature, even if you're interested in the practice, if you have a very solid belief in yourself, in your ego, that'll be an obstacle to your fully manifesting your Buddha nature. After all, ego, this self, this artificial construct that we've established, is the root of all negativity. In the absence of Buddhahood manifesting, you have to remove all the emotional and cognitive obscurations that we have. But the most basic obscuration is this very strong belief in a self. And if you have that strong belief in yourself, you're not going to be able to remove those obscurations. I think that should be pretty clear. Now, some religions include a need to eliminate a belief in self, but they but there are many that do not consider this. For many religions, the self is just considered a normal thing and it doesn't have to be relinquished. The Buddhists call these people turdikas. These are people who are close to Dharma because they're religious, but the religious belief is not powerful enough to manifest Buddhahood because they believe in the essence of self, which is contradictory to the understanding of Buddha nature. The remedy to this obstacle is greater study of wisdom, wisdom teachings, working with teachers, performing practice that increase our wisdom and selfless nature. The third obstacle, and this is sort of, I had to think about this for a little bit, and you may also have to. The third obstacle is fear of suffering in samsara. That's an obstacle to manifesting our Buddha nature, because this fear will prevent you from entering the Mahayana path. We are striving to eliminate suffering, but there has to be an understanding of the void, empty nature of all suffering at the same time. When one can understand that the empty nature of suffering, then one can take on the suffering of others. Because as seen through wisdom's eyes, suffering is not permanent. It has a cause, and as a cause, it has a remedy. So we don't fear suffering as something permanent. And how do we develop this fearlessness? Well, it's a result of wisdom, which develops through meditation and analysis. It's like that. So wisdom will eliminate any false beliefs in self. So again, the way to overcome fear is wisdom, which develops through meditation and analysis. Right now, your wisdom and my wisdom is very weak. But with cultivation and practice and repetition, it becomes greater and greater and greater until we fully develop the wisdom of the Buddhas. The fourth obstacle is a lack of inclination to help other beings. And there are folks like that. And we at sometimes are like that. And it happens when we feel our own problems are enough. We're not really interested in what happens to other people. We can get like that. We get all bogged down. We probably once or twice during this COVID time of plague, we have thought of ourselves as being so burdened. We don't feel compassion really for other beings. But that's obviously, that's an invitation to practice compassion when we're feeling those things. But the point here is that our lack of compassion will result in our inability to move along the path. Someone with this attitude who practices may actually reach high levels of meditation, even without compassion, but they'll never reach Buddhahood. compassion will eliminate the lack of interest in helping others. The Buddhas have perfect compassion that is non-referential. It doesn't matter whether you're friend, enemy, a whale, or an ant. She has non-referential compassion. So this Buddha nature that we have innately, that nature possesses the seed to great compassion. So here's the point. Buddha potential is innate. It's there. It's there right now and can be developed through practice. You can work towards Buddhahood step by step. The birth of a bodhisattva, one who aspires to Buddhahood for the benefit of all beings, is compared to the birth of a child. And compassion is compared to being the nursemaid of the infant bodhisattva. What a beautiful image. With compassion grows meditation and wisdom. So we develop our compassion. We begin with an aspiration, right? And when we develop wisdom, meditation, and compassion, when we develop those, we can call ourselves daughters and sons of the Buddha. This compassion is a nursemaid for the infant bodhisattva, and is best spoken of in Shanti Deva's prayer, dedication to the precepts of a bodhisattva. This compassion is most exemplified in this prayer. I'm going to read it. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, attain an ocean of happiness and joy. By virtue of my merits, may no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled. With a mind weighed down by depression, may the blind see forms. May the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn by toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. May those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvest. May all medicine be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. May I be the protector of those without protection, a leader for those on the journey, and a boat, a bridge, a passage for those desiring the further shore. May the pain of every living creature be completely cleared away. May I be the doctor and the medicine. May I be the nurse and for all sick beings in the world. Until everyone is healed, May I be a guard for all those who are protectionless, a guide for those who journey on the road, for those who wish to go across the water. May I be a boat, a raft, a bridge for all those ailing in the world until their every illness has been healed. May I myself become for them the doctor, nurse, and medicine itself. For as long as space endures, for as long as living beings remain, until then may I too abide to dispel the misery of the world. If these words stirred you at all, I assure you, that means the Buddha is within you. He moves your heart. It is there. And so when we make these aspirations real, when we know that all beings possess Buddha nature, we'll develop loving kindness towards all beings. And that makes it possible for us to achieve Buddhahood. That's my talk for today. I'm going to look and see. I'm not good at navigating this whole thing, so I'm going to try to see if I can find your questions. So bear with me for just a minute. Well, I don't see any questions on there, but does anyone have any thoughts or comments or questions they would like to bring up? We'll just do it sort of at random. Anybody can speak up. Any questions, thoughts, comments?
Hi, Lama Tom.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi, it's Justin.
Yes, hi.
Hi. I'm always fascinated by what to me appears to be a contradiction that I try to understand between the idea of us not having a self and the idea that we, whatever that is, has accumulated karma, and, you know, through our choices earns merit and so forth. So I'm just always fascinated by how is there not a self, but then there kind of also is.
Yeah. So what we have constructed is artificial. And our true nature is Buddha nature. But until we reach that point, we're still accumulating karma. And you may look at it this way. This unreal self is accumulating unreal karma.
Okay.
But nonetheless, at this level, we're going to experience it. And we will continue to experience it until we actually reach Buddhahood, which means we no longer will be accumulating karma. I don't know if that helps you adjust.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah. No, it does. It's workable. Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you. Great talk.
Good. Thank you. So, but, you know, that is, that does, we have to keep the turnings of the wheel of Dharma in order. We have to recognize that the process of dispelling these illusions until we actually do, they're awfully real in terms of how we experience them. That's just, that's the nature of samsara. It's suffering. We'll continue this until we actually are able, through our work with ourselves and through Dharma, to recognize that. That's why shamatha and insight meditation is so important to our advancement on the path, because through deep states of meditation, we can start to very slowly start to see the unreality of these various consciousnesses. Right now, though, you know, we're seeing in a mirror darkly what this Buddha nature might be all about.
Thank you.
Other thoughts? Thank you, Justin. Anybody else have any thoughts?
I do.
Yeah, Marilyn.
Yeah, a couple months ago, you know, I've been pondering Buddha nature for a long time and everything. And I was just like, you know, going along, blah, yeah, I got it. Yeah, I got it. Maybe once in a while I might see it. I know I don't have it when I'm angry. Yeah, I do have it when I'm angry, all that stuff. But the real shift came for me a couple months ago when I realized that all the people that I take a dislike to, that as a bodhisattva, I have to wait till they're enlightened before I could be enlightened. That changed the whole thing, that they have Buddha nature. That just changed the whole thing, that I had to wait and help them too. And it was like, wow. And then everything shifted, hopefully for the better. I'm still working on it, but you know, that's going to take this lifetime and maybe more.
Yeah. And it's a shift of seeing, instead of seeing people as enemies, but just the same as you. And what we said in the talk is compassion, understanding they suffer just like you. Compassion is the nursemaid for the bodhisattva path. So you found the nursemaid.
Yeah, thank you. Really helps. I heard this one guided meditation where you have to, you start your meditation with the one that you're having problems with in your head.
Yes.
Not with someone you love, but someone you're having problems with, which is not easy. And you start out by picturing them as a baby. And you picture them as this nice, innocent, cute little baby. And you go on from there. And boy, that made a difference too.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I see by the clock on the wall, we're going to have to end here. So let's dedicate the merit of our being together. Sonam Deye Tamche Jipani Topne Nipe Dronam Pancheni Kiga Nachi Balap Drupai Sipe Sok Drola Dropa Shok. By this merit, may all attain awakening. May merit defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from this ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. May we free all beings. May we free all beings. Thank you so much. Thank you for the kindness of your attention, and hope to see you again very soon. I certainly hope to see you next year when the new center is built. It's come along, and we'll be there soon. So, bless you all, and take care, and stay safe. Stay very safe. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.